Welcome to AIM on Air, the official podcast of the Association for Intelligent Information Management. Founded in 1944, AIM is dedicated to advancing the information management industry. We represent a vibrant global community of information leaders committed to driving exceptional business outcomes through information management fueled by technology like AI and automation. You can learn more at AIIM.org. I'm AIM President and CEO, Tori Miller-Liu, and our guest today is Kenyetta Dean-Pugh, who serves as the Chief Information Assets Officer at the Central Bank of the Bahamas. Her journey in information science began at Pratt Institute in New York, where she earned her Master of Science in Library and Information Science. While there, she was selected for the prestigious Project Chart Initiative, which is funded by the Laura Bush 21st Century Librarian Program, where she helped digitize nearly 15,000 historical images across major Brooklyn institutions. After gaining valuable experience at the Brooklyn Historical Society, she returned to the Bahamas, where she held positions at the College of the Bahamas before joining the Central Bank of the Bahamas. There, she's evolved from a special collections librarian to her current role leading the Information Assets Management Unit. As an official AIM ambassador, she continues to champion intelligent information management in our community. Please join me in welcoming Kenyetta Dean-Pugh. Welcome, Kenyetta.
Thank you.
Well, I'm so excited to jump into your career and your experience and your thoughts on the industry. But one thing that I was so curious about, looking back on your career, what was the pivotal moment or decision that set you on the path to becoming an information management professional? How did you get here?
I think I arrived at this spot because after returning home from graduate school, I resumed my position at the College of the Bahamas as the Special Collections Librarian. And at some point, the library officer at the Central Bank was retiring. And so they were actually looking for a replacement. They wanted to move the role from just that of being a library officer to actually a librarian, which they had never had before. So I didn't apply, but someone contacted me and said, you know, why not apply, submit your resume? And so I did that. And I was shortlisted. I was eventually interviewed by the governor, and I was offered the position of librarian at the Central Bank of the Bahamas. So when I joined, the library was a unit of the research department responsible for maintaining the collection for the Central Bank of the Bahamas library. And so over my first year at the bank, we gradually became responsible, the administrators, for the corporate intranet. And then we became responsible for the website. And so we were gradually moving towards management of information resources at the bank. Mm-hmm. And around 2018, the governor decided, or he had a thought, that maybe the records management unit and the library would merge together to begin to become the information management assets unit that would be responsible for enterprise information management, not just of the corporate records, but also of the information resources found in the library. So that really was the transition for myself into the new role as the Chief Information and Assets Officer, not just looking at librarianship in terms of managing the physical library, which is now transitioning to a digital library, but also managing the corporate records and really driving the innovation towards digitization of all of the corporate records to digital records and no longer having physical records. So I think that really was a catalyst of when we started to become responsible for additional information resources within the bank, the role developed. And then as different things, you know, evolve in terms of, you know, it was a drive to organizations now capturing paper so that we have electronic records. Also in terms of freedom of information, we have legislation that was passed in 2017. And so one of the mandates of that is that persons will have access to records, public records. And the only way to have access is if they're digitized. So if they're not digitized, it's very difficult to complete that mandate for the public. And so that was also one of the driving forces in terms of us moving towards intelligent information management, and that we completed the digitization of the corporate records, which was started probably maybe about 10 years prior, but really had not gained any traction. So when the unit was formed, it was our mandate to completely digitize and capture all of the corporate records, as well as look at those other technologies that would make us more efficient in doing this. And so gradually, you know, attending AIM, attending AMA, completing the webinars, attending sessions, we learned more and more about what are some of the components for digital transformation. You know, you digitize, then you have, you know, digitization and digitalization, where you're trying to actually transform your processes, make yourself more efficient in the work that you do.
Oh, that's so, it's so interesting, because it, I've heard some other information management practitioners talk about the complexity of sort of having one foot in the past with paper records and then one foot in the future with digitizing those records and also just digital records and documents. How do you, I guess, how do you manage that sort of dichotomy of your day-to-day job then, when you're thinking about all sorts of documents and information in all sorts of different formats?
I think it's challenging because, you know, in the paper realm, it was so easy to classify the records, assign the file names, the naming conventions, place it inside a cabinet, lock the cabinet so that you had access control and all of that other stuff. So that was very, very simple. You controlled who had access to the files, when it was returned. You had the tracking number, et cetera. Now trying to relay all of that to the digital environment is a bit different. And sometimes it's a challenge to make persons understand that the same treatment of the paper record is really the same treatment that you're supposed to give to the electronic record. And so you have to, I guess, be more intentional in terms of ensuring that you have the proper naming conventions for the digital files. How do you secure it? You know, access controls, security permissions. These are things that are a bit more difficult to control in the electronic realm because, you know, everybody has a laptop, everybody has access. You have to be very specific in terms of creating the profiles, assigning the permissions, assigning access. And so when you have, I guess, one foot in the physical realm and one foot in the digital realm, it's kind of hard to mesh the two. Mm-hmm. So it's really about ensuring that, you know, if we're going digital, we have to ensure that we're not accepting any more paper. We're really, we have a go forward date where we have a date that we've identified as after this date, we no longer accept paper, and adhering to that. So as a regulator, we receive paper from our supervised financial institutions, clients needing different services. And so to make sure to ensure that they're not sending us paper and making it more difficult for us, because now with no paper in the bank, we don't have printers anymore. So we're not printing. We have centralized scanning that's done in our department, Information Assets Management Unit. So departments don't have the individual scanners where they can scan. So now we have to be a bit more intentional because you're getting this paper. Now we have to arrange to come to IMU for us to scan or capture the records. You know, how do you store them? We no longer have offsite storage because that was an exercise in terms of us going through those offsite records, determining what needed to be finally captured and what needed to be disposed of. So once that area was cleared, we are no longer accepting paper. We are no longer storing paper. We no longer have cabinets in departments to house those records. So you have to be very, very intentional in ensuring that all of the processes incorporate those digital aspects of, you know, how do you manage those files? Where they're stored, doing all of those checks and balances, ensuring that persons have access and permissions to access the records, to review the records, to validate the records. And then we're completing the retention period review in terms of ensuring that We're keeping the records for the specified length of time, as well as not trying to over-retain those records. So even though we're supposed to be doing the same exact process to the digital records, we find ourselves sometimes not doing it, that we're creating more steps when really and truly digital records should offer some more, should offer some more efficiency in the process versus what the paper had. So it's a challenge because you're just trying to get persons acclimated to what the process is for the digital records, because it's really and truly the same process that how you treated the paper. We should be treating the electronic record the same or even better in a more simplified, more efficient way.
And with that expansion of the digital realm, to use your phrasing, which I love, how are you getting involved with the information technology team? Is that a separate department from your unit?
So we have an information technology team, and then we have an information security team. So in terms of the information technology, they're ensuring that the upgrades are provided to our systems that we use to capture the records, as well as the content management system that we use to house the records. So we've recently passed or had a data classification policy approved. So again, some of those things like auto classification, auto retention, those are some of the things that we want to now have included in the system so that those things offer more efficiency. It isn't a manual process in terms of having to manual handle the record or classify the record. But if we have some of those tools included, as well as automation for a simple task, that makes it easier to manage the digital record. So employing some of those, I know that AI is a very big topic now in most of the arenas that you visit in terms of AIM. I see AIM has rebranded the annual conference. You go to ARMA, there's lots of topic and discussions on data privacy and AI. So we want to be able to use the technologies that we have access to make our work more efficient, to make ourselves more accountable so that we're using the data that we receive to really transform the process.
And it's so interesting that you're really forward thinking in terms of how you're using AI and how you're digitizing records. Do you work collaboratively then with the information security and information technology team to get to that vision?
I think initially we worked more so in silos in that everybody was, you know, doing their own little thing. But as we, I guess, continue in our work in terms of there are similar topics in all of it. So AI, data privacy, cloud services, there are components that speak to all of us where IT is needed in terms of providing the hardware and the software. Info security is needed because they assist us with identifying those controls for the different levels of classification. So now we're trying to work more closely together because they're components where they have to give input in terms of, you know, what tools do we use? How do we use those tools? What type of permissions are we providing? What are some of the controls that we're using to ensure that the data is secured, especially in terms of data privacy? Looking at AI, how do we incorporate that so that, you know, we're using it ethically, and how we manage the sensitive data that we have? So I think, yes, now we've arrived at a point where we recognize that we can no longer work in silos, that information management in particular is an area that includes a lot of different subject specialties and subject matter experts. So you need all of those persons working together to ensure that you have an effective information management program in any organization, and in particular inside the bank.
I really love that idea of moving from silos to this collaborative ecosystem. It makes just such perfect sense. So it's really refreshing to hear. Now you talked a lot about your digitization project that you've been working on and how you as an organization have been looking at AI. Are there any projects in particular that you're really excited about?
So we're now working on developing a data privacy framework. And so that includes drafting the policy and procedures for that framework, as well as developing the framework for the enterprise, and include in, as a part of that process is also developing and creating the data map. And so that's going to be very interesting, because we're going to be actually looking at all of the units, all of the business units within the bank, and seeing what type of information do you have, where is it stored, who has access to it, just to see if there are any, you know, cross-training in terms of, does banking have the same information that research has, where is it stored, how are they using it, et cetera. So it gives us a holistic view of the types of information, in particular, what type of sensitive data are we collecting? How are we using that? How are we not using it? How are we protecting it or not protecting it? So it gives an idea of some of the controls and what we need to include inside the framework, so that we can develop a very robust framework, especially in light of regulations such as GDPR. We have the Bahamas Data Protection Act, all of those other countries that have privacy laws, just ensuring that we're benchmarking to include some of the more important features of those aspects of the legislation in our own privacy framework. So I think right now, developing the privacy framework and just seeing how closely aligned we can have in terms of organizations, countries that are employing the best practices in their own privacy laws is very interesting, because now it's really a hot topic. You go to a conference, you go to a webinar, you see a lot of topics, a lot of webinars, conversation pieces on data privacy, as well as AI. So they almost go hand in hand, because now with AI, you're looking at the ethical use of information, the privacy of the information that you're ingesting. How are you treating that information? Are you being clear and upfront with your users in terms of what you're keeping, what you're not keeping? Are you getting their buy-in or their permission to use the information that they're giving to you for whatever purpose? So I think for right now, the development of the data privacy framework, as well as the data mapping of the organization, is really exciting, because before this process, we don't have a holistic overview of the information that we collect. We know that research collects some information, some raw data that they use to produce the reports. We know that banking collects some data. We know that bank supervision collects some data, but we don't have a holistic overview of all of the data that the bank collects. And I think that when we're done, we can be very, very surprised and amazed to see that we're collecting so much, and that we may have departments that are collecting the same information, but using it in different ways. So it's going to be very, very interesting what the outcome is after we complete the surveys, after we complete all of our benchmarking exercises, as we try to develop this framework. It's going to be very, very interesting, the data that we receive out of this process.
Oh, I really, that's so interesting around how it's not just about coming up with governance, it's really about mapping the data that you have and the value that it delivers.
Yes.
So when you all are doing the benchmarking that you mentioned, are you looking at the cost of that information or the cost of that data?
For the most, that's an interesting point. We did not consider costs. We mainly looked at countries, especially we use GDPR as the standard in terms of GDPR is really the standard. And then you have the California Privacy Act. That is the standard for the US that closely resembles the GDPR. So we were looking more so at countries, specific legislation in terms of what pieces of the GDPR do they have? Which are the unifying themes throughout countries in the region and in North America that have, you know, they all have a specific statement relating to X, Y, and Z. We want to make sure that the framework that we build has that includes that statement, so that, you know, we're all on the same page. We want to make sure, look at countries that have a very robust framework, so that we can follow that and we can implement that in our own framework. So cost is not was not considered, but cost definitely is, I think, a factor that we should consider, because sometimes we don't think of the value of information, but our unit's name is Information Assets Management, and information is an asset. And sometimes you don't think to monetize that asset, so that we don't, when we think of over retention or we think of disposition, we don't think of how much does that cost to maintain that information, or how much does it cost to get rid of that information through shredding or disposition. But I think if we were to consider that more and ensure that the business understands that there is a cost attached to when you over retain, because now you have to clean up all of that rot, or when you have to shred because you've kept for so long, they'll understand the importance of applying those controls and being compliant and ensuring that we're managing our records correctly and our information correctly.
That makes so much sense. Now, talk to me a little bit about how you're going to operationalize the framework. How, once you have it in place and it's sort of dictating how you treat data and information, how do you train staff to follow the framework? How do you enforce the framework?
So within the bank, we have our unit, and then we have department liaisons. And these are persons that are embedded in each unit, and they are the go-to person, or they're the person that's responsible for ensuring that there is compliance or adherence to the records management policies, data classification, data privacy, et cetera. So the intent is that when we develop this framework, we'll have persons within our team that are assigned to each business unit to ensure that there is dialogue between us as the second line of defense to ensure our compliance, as well as the department in terms of applying those protocols to their everyday work in terms of how they treat the records that they receive from their various stakeholders. So training, definitely. With the implementation of the framework, we have to have training internally for the internal team in terms of ensuring that we all understand how the framework functions and what's our roles and responsibilities. Then, of course, training for the business unit heads. Those are the HODs, because, again, they drive the enforcement of data privacy, data classification within their own units. They drive that by identifying staff in the units who will work on these various projects or work as a part of their job description, their job responsibilities, and ensuring that this work is done. Then, of course, the department liaisons, they will be the person who works along with the Information Assets Management Unit to ensure that they're following the correct protocols, they understand their role and the responsibilities of enforcing data privacy, that they understand what data privacy is. So, for the most part, it's going to be a lot of training and retraining to ensure that persons understand their roles. It's going to be awareness, because awareness is a part of the entire process, because we need to perform enterprise-wide training so that even persons who are not responsible intimately in actually dealing with records or dealing with information, et cetera, they still have an understanding of what data privacy is, because we're all exposed in some facet to data privacy, to data protection, in the roles that we play in terms of you accept a resume, it may have some personal identifiable information on it. You may not hire the person within the bank, may not hire that person, but in HR, you may know that, okay, this is a piece of information or document that has somebody's personal identifiable information on it. You can't store it just on a file on the regular server or the drive, because that's exposing it to everyone within the bank. So you may know that, okay, with data privacy, I can only keep the record for the specific purpose that I had. If I wanted to use it as a bank of resumes, and I didn't inform the person or get consent from the person prior to, I can't do that. So the training and the awareness were very important, because the very pieces of legislation, they speak to how you treat information and what you must do to ensure compliance. Because at the end of the day, we want to be compliant, not just compliancy with our internal policies and procedures, but also being compliant with international regulations, ISO standards, et cetera, and how we treat information. And so data privacy is going to be one of those programs that we have consistent training. We have attestation in terms of testing for employees through probably computer-based training where they have to attest to, they understand various scenarios. They attest to doing their due diligence when they're working with records and user information, and then just working to constantly ensure that we're following best practices, we're evolving as things change, that we're employing technology like automation, AI, to make the process very seamless so that persons, there is less manual error, that persons can complete their work, they know what they're doing with less interference. And just using those tools that we have to ensure that we're doing as best as we can, following the mandates that we've identified through our various policies and procedures.
Wow. And just hearing you outline everything you're doing to achieve adoption of that framework, I think you're echoing some other sentiments I've heard from members about how expansive the role of the information leader has become.
Yes.
We did some research on this earlier in this year. Just hearing your response, like I don't know what your exact job description is, but you're doing change management, technology management, information management, business analysis.
Yes.
I'm probably missing like 8 other things. How has your role evolved since the start of your career? Do you feel like it's more expansive and complex than it was, you know, a decade or two decades ago?
Most definitely. So I started at the College of the Bahamas as a library assistant, became a library associate. I went off and I did my graduate degree in library science and archives and digital curation and came back. I was a special collections librarian focusing on the Bahamian cultural collection, building out that collection and working with my users. I transitioned to the Central Bank of the Bahamas, again, working mainly in a corporate library setting, focusing on money, economics, finance, that kind of collection and those resources. We became the intranet administrators managing the corporate intranet. And then I'm also the website administrator. So I manage and administer the corporate website. And then of course, as the business or the organization recognized the value of the information assets management unit, we got additional assignments in terms of, okay, you know, looking at the wider landscape. Data classification was something that was missing, even though we had it in a smaller aspect in terms of we had protective marking, but it really wasn't expansive. So it was where, okay, now we're looking to store or use the cloud as a service provider. So we need to have data classification because you need to know your to risk tolerance in terms of what records do you want to send to the cloud. So a part of that was looking at data classification and building out that framework in terms of, you know, what categories do we want? So we use highly protected and public, and then having all of those records that the bank has identifying, you know, is it highly protected? Is it protected? Is it public? So that we have that category so persons can quickly look and see, okay, this record is a public record. So that has less controls around it. If it's highly protected, it has the most controls around in terms of, you know, two-factor authentication, encryption, that sort of thing. So that we know those are the things that we have to have enabled in order to share information at that highest level of classification. And then just making sure that the additional responsibilities such as data privacy, like you said, change management, technology management. I think the role has evolved because I think the industry itself has evolved, because when you look at the transition from AIM, even AMA has evolved in terms of this scope and focus to include things like information governance, where you've had records management, then information management. Now you have information governance, which is the overarching umbrella over everything. And then you have all of these various stakeholders like audit, legal, risk, HR, the business units, records management that are involved in the information governance sphere. You see that the industry has evolved and it's continuing to evolve as we're exposed to more technology. And it's the same thing where, similarly, my role has evolved where I am no longer just a librarian, even though I've met many persons in records and information management, information governance that started as librarians. And I think we use some of that skill set in organization, in research, in technology development. It easily transitioned to information management, information governance, because we were already exposed to some of those things, and that you may have started as a generalist, but due to technology, you had to keep evolving as your role evolved. Because, you know, before you had the card catalog, where you had to go to the card catalog to find the book on the shelf. And then you had the online public access catalog that made it easier that it was electronic. So, you know, libraries transitioned and evolved to embrace technology. And so records and information management, it's also evolved to embrace technology. And so as the industry has evolved, I think the persons, especially myself and others, they continue to evolve to embrace some of those things. So now you have things like AI. How do you use that ethically in the work that you're doing? How do you make sure that the information that AI is pulling from is authentic and real, so that the results you get are authentic and real results? Data privacy, in terms of, you have things like GDPR, the California Privacy Act, and other legislation from various states that will impact how you manage and use data. So as we continue to see the evolution in the industry at large, I think we will either authentically evolve, just because our roles are changing. As things change, we'll have to evolve to stay ahead, to stay abreast, to stay future thinking, to kind of think about what's coming next and prepare ourselves for that. So definitely, yes, my role has evolved. I think it will continue to evolve as the industry itself evolves.
Oh, wow. And looking ahead, you sort of touched on this a little bit, but just to kind of hear your specific thoughts, what are the big industry shifts that you think are going to happen over the next 2 to 5 years that information management practitioners really need to be thinking about?
I think we're going to, for the next 2 to 5 years, I think definitely we're going to see a shift towards more increased AI integration. So this is really going to transform information management as we know it, because you have so many applications that now have AI integrated in the applications that make it easier or more efficient to your work. But you have to make sure that the work that it's pulling from is authentic. So it's going to need a lot more data analysis in terms of AI integration, and to ensure that, you know, we're using it effectively just to improve our efficiencies and the way that we're doing our work. I think another thing that we will be exploring more of is going to really drive information management is data privacy. Because by increasing our use of AI, we're going to be emphasizing more, there'll be more emphasis on data privacy and the ethical use of AI. So we're going to make sure that the information that we're receiving, we're using, et cetera, we're applying all of those data privacy standards or data protection standards. We'll have to be more responsible in our data and our information management practices, just because we're going to have those drivers like data privacy that will force us to become more ethical, so to speak, in terms of how we manage our data, how do we manage our information, how do we treat our data, how do we treat our information, and the users that are providing us that information. We'll have become more intentional in ensuring that we're applying the most robust data privacy standards to that information. I also think cyber resiliency will also be a very big topic because, again, with the increased threats of cybersecurity, we'll have to be more resilient in ensuring that we have robust information security programs in our organization, especially when it comes to information management. Because again, information is data. I mean, information is an asset. So when we look at being ransomware and hackers are holding our information hostage, the information isn't necessarily important to them, but it's important to us. So because we want to have access to our own information, we may pay the ransom if we don't have resilient and strong or robust information security protocols in place. So we're going to have to ensure that we have those things in place so that we're not subject to hackers or persons who will be, you know, cyber threats for that. So I think those three things, the cybersecurity, resiliency, ensuring that we have robust security controls around our information and information security, data privacy, ensuring that we're using AI ethically, we're applying all of those data privacy protocols, we're following best practices in the regulations and legislation, as well as increased AI integration. I think AI is here to stay. I think maybe about 2 years ago, you heard mention of AI, but not at the level now. I think the last year, I've heard so much more. You know, every webinar that I've seen has some component of AI. And I think that's just going to continue to grow, especially as the tools and the product and the technology, they continue to grow. We're going to see more of that being integrated in information management with the aim of making our work more efficient, more practical, but it will cause us to be more diligent in ensuring that, you know, how we manage and protect our information is going to be more critical as we move forward.
You know, one question that comes to mind hearing your very eloquent response there is, I've talked to a few experts in our community recently about how data governance, information governance, and even AI governance are converging.
And yes.
Would you agree with that? Because it kind of sounds like you might from your response.
I think that it does, because, you know, initially there was data governance that's really spoke to how you manage the data, just how you govern the data. Well, then you have information management, the information governance that is really the umbrella that includes data governance. So data governance is a subset of information governance. And now with the integration of AI, I think AI governance will also become a subset of information governance, because information governance really speaks to how you manage the data, the information, and all of those associated, factions. So all of those will come together. I don't think it's going to be possible to just focus on data or just focus on AI or just focus on information, because they're all integrated. You all see the integration in data analytics, how you receive the data, how you use the data, how you process the data, which in turn becomes information, because the data is just really the raw data that you're looking to govern and manage. But the information is really the final product that really is the asset that belongs to the organization. And so when we integrate AI, we're going to have to include AI in that entire process and the whole governance model, because we can't have an efficient information governance model without considering AI. AI is really the driver that's, I think, is going to really shake up and change the way that we work in the information management field, because it's just so prevalent. It's in all of our applications. You have the integration on your search bars in Chrome, in Bing, et cetera. So we're going to have to embrace AI governance as a part of information governance to ensure that, you know, we're doing everything that we need to do to ensure that we're being ethical. We're doing the proper data analysis in terms of our data, as well as the data privacy, which is a component of that as well. So I think all of these various topics, even though they were siloed previously, now they're just merging, they're coming together, that we're going to be forced to work together under one umbrella. And I think that's the natural evolution, that everything will just merge into one. It may not no longer be information governance. It may be some other name that encompasses everything. But even if it's still just information governance, you will definitely see the inclusion of AI, the inclusion, the components of data governance. I think you'll see all of those things together under one umbrella.
Wow. You've really, in the course of this conversation, you've painted this picture for us around a practice and a profession that's more expansive, very digital, highly collaborative, very inspirational. Do you have any final pieces of advice for information leaders today, things that they ought to be thinking about?
I think for our leaders for today, we have to look at talent management as one of the core functions that we should be doing in terms of ensuring that we upskill and reskill positions for persons that have been working in the traditional information management field, maybe working specifically with physical records, with the transition to digital records. And we're all in different stages of that process. Persons will need to get reacclimated to information management. They'll need to upskill or reskill themselves. Just because we have technology, we have AI, we have data privacy, data classification, auto retention, all of these things that at its core component is technology. And so if you want to stay current, we have to ensure that we're providing access to relevant training through the various professional organizations, especially through AIM, that has, as a professional member, you have access to hundreds of webinars and certificate courses that for my team has really been essential. So my team has used it to upskill themselves because our roles are evolving. So roles that they came into the unit with in terms of just being capture specialists, just doing scanning and validation of records. Now their roles are evolving to include things like data privacy work, freedom of information work, data classification, just the evolution of where information management is going. So I think definitely talent management is something that we have to look future-wise towards, ensure that our team members and ourselves are equipped the necessary skills so that we're ready to meet those challenges when the yardstick moves, that we're able to be ready to actually start from day one doing some of that work towards some of those areas. And I think just being progressive, ensuring that there's continuous development, continuous learning. Coming from a librarian background, you know, persons that I've met or worked with who 30 years ago got the MLS, they've said that, you know, 30 years later, the MLS is so different from what they did before. And so, you know, in the librarianship field, we focus on continuous education because the industry and the profession has changed so much that you just can't rely on what you learned 30 10 or 15 years ago. So it's really about continuous development, always learning, always trying to be ahead of the curveball, seeing where some of those things are going and trying to ensure that yourself and your team, they're ready to meet those challenges. Just being, I think, open-minded to some of the changes because, you know, going to some sessions, persons feel as though, you know, AI is like the worst thing, you know, created because it's so dangerous. But there's really a lot of good that's available in AI. You just need to know how to use it responsibly. You need to know how to have that I guess the information that's provided to AI will be the information that's produced for the user. So we have to ensure that the information, the data is good data. So that means being more intentional, being more meticulous, doing all of those checks and balances so that what we put in is what we receive. And so it's really about ensuring that we're embracing technology. We're looking at where things are moving towards and looking at those synergies in the industry as well as synergies within our own organization. So instead of working in a silo by yourself, you know, reaching out to IT, reaching out to information security, looking to see what some of the synergies are and working together collaboratively, because the reality is information management is a collaborative space because you have so many different industry leaders from various industries working together really towards a common goal. And we all bring a different perspective, a different experience to it. So, you know, I think, you know, moving forward, 4 to 5 years, even 10 years, continue working collaboratively, continue to reach out to those business units or those industry leaders that are in different space than us, but they have something to offer. They have a different perspective, and working together will ensure that we're moving information management in the right direction.
So wonderful and such valuable advice. I think it's important for listeners to know that Kenyatta is an official AIM ambassador, which means she serves as a resource to our community at AIM, as well as a champion of AIM's programs. And if you'd like to connect with her, we encourage you to join AIM and become part of our AIM online community and meet Kenyatta and all the other ambassadors at either our online or in-person events. Kenyatta, thank you so much for being on AIM on Air. It was a great pleasure.
Same, Ruth. Thank you.